WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present the Ivan Raiklin Report with retired Lieutenant Colonel of the Green Beret, Ivan Raiklin. Ivan served 25 years in the Department of Defense, Intel, and Special Operations communities as an enlisted officer, civilian contractor on active duty, reserves, and National Guard across 5 states. Most recently, he was an instructor at the Joint Military Intelligence Training Center, teaching the U.S. intelligence intel community and international partners about intelligence analysis, national security, and multinational operations. He is currently a constitutional attorney. And now, here is your host, Ivan Raiklin.
All right, folks. Ivan Raiklin with the Raiklin Report. It is Friday. TGIF, right? So what do we normally do on Fridays? We do a week in review, and then we're going to talk about what's going to happen next week that is of interest and consequence to our constitutional order. Okay. So this week has kind of been light on the House side because they were not in session. On Wednesday, we had a hearing down at the border of the Homeland Security Committee. But in the Senate, however, we saw quite a few hearings going on. I happened to bump into, as I mentioned, I think yesterday, a couple senators, and things are progressing forward. Hopefully they're going to jump on board to essentially defend our constitutional rights, since I'm probably the best avatar to push back against the lawless executive branch, namely the DHS, the DOD, and the Department of Justice. Keep in mind, I am still not able to go into, as far as I know, I am not allowed as a military retiree, or in this gray area it's called, as a reservist retiree, I'm not able to go on a military base. Why? I guess they fear me. They fear the noises coming out of my mouth. But that's all right. We're trying to work and resolve the issue with the legislative branch. I had a brief conversation with Congressman Rob Whitman's office, who I believe is the number two on the House Armed Services Committee. So we're trying to address that issue through his office. I'm also trying to address that issue through Senator Rand Paul's office, Senator Josh Hawley, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, and other offices that I'll be probably interacting with over the next week or so. Okay. So, which means that hopefully we're going to get to a point where that's resolved. So the Senate's been in session. They've been doing a couple of what's called on the Senate Armed Services Committee, known as posture statement review. Every year, a combatant commander, which is the senior ranking officer from a particular geographic or functional combatant command within the Department of Defense, testifies before the House or the Senate, in this instance the Senate, to showcase what the priorities are for that year or for the Congress to be able to budget for. So threat assessments, as well, you know, it outlines a threat, what the current focus and priority areas are for each combatant command so that Congress can justify its funding mechanism for that particular national security component. Sometimes the services will have a posture statement. Sometimes the combatant commands will have a posture statement. So that's what's your March timeframe. We're in March. So they're going through that cyclical testimony. Okay. Now, what's going on in the courts? Well, I happened to peek into a couple times this week, also today, into the Federal District Court of Washington, D.C. And Proud Boys trial is still ongoing. I wasn't in there before they dismissed for the day. They dismissed early. I heard it was around a little bit around maybe before or around 11 a.m. But at the same time at 11 a.m., a gentleman by the name of, I think Mr. Brock is the last name, and he was the guy that was in the Senate chambers with flex cuffs that he happened to pick up along the way into the chambers. So today was the sentencing hearing. So he had already been convicted by a bench trial by the judge for 6 counts And today was sentencing. So usually you have sentencing guidelines. The government wants to always ask for the maximum because that's just kind of how the government is always. And then the judge went back and forth on determining which guidelines he would use, whether or not he's going to mitigate or amplify based on particular circumstances and guidance from the sentencing guidelines. I'm not going to go into too much details on that, other than to say that the judge said that there was no remorse by the defendant. And so that way, for that reason, he couldn't lower the sentencing guidelines, but he would amplify them because of rhetoric that he, again, it appears as though a majority of the reason why he was sentenced, by the way, the conclusion was he was sentenced for two years, 24 months, that is, which happened to be on the low end of the 24 to 30 months that he ended up. Vectoring in on he being the Air Force veteran, an officer, didn't have any criminal charges before that. He bumped it back up to 24 months simply because of the rhetoric that was used by Mr. Brock on social media. And even though he didn't act out based on the words, the syllables, the consonants, and the vowels, and the words and sounds that were made on Facebook, those were the reasons why the judge decided that he would need to sentence him to 24 months. Let me say that again. Not because of the actions that were conducted inside the Capitol, which were actually, by the way, Mr. Brock actually de-escalated at least one situation so that violence wouldn't take place. He did not commit any violence on any property or any person while inside the Capitol. It was because of his rhetoric in the run-up and because of the apparel that he wore that seemed to be threatening to the judge. Meaning, he was wearing defensive equipment. He was wearing something on his head to protect his head in the event that Antifa was going to attack. He was wearing something to protect his body and his torso. And for that reason, he was sentenced to 24 months. Had he not, purportedly the judge would have given him a lower sentence than 24 months. And the judge is going to decide whether or not he's going to allow a grant to serve that term. In the Texas area, I believe that Mr. Brock is in that, resides in that area. So we'll see what takes place. Bottom line is, I don't understand how rhetoric that falls within the First Amendment, that may be spicy, I get it. Some of the sounds and the syllables and the vowels and the consonants used by the defendant are maybe outside of a standard deviation of normal discourse on the internet, particularly, you know, when everything is censored nowadays because it's so offensive. So that's kind of what the judge used as his justification to give him 24 months. Incredible. Banana Republic, we're basically moving, inching towards. All right, what else went on today? Well, Friday, the DC Gulag POWs can see visitors. And it appears as though Marjorie Taylor Greene is trying to do her part to expose the disgusting conditions that the J6 POWs are under. And I'm hearing through the grapevine and different sources that some of these POWs are being moved now that the new Congress is scrutinizing the DC Gulag administration, as well as the mayor and the Department of Corrections of DC, scrutinizing their activity. guess what? Since they know they will not pass scrutiny and muster of doing things on the up and up, they're moving their POWs in order for that lawless behavior to not be uncovered. That's so unfortunate. But hopefully we can get at least some sort of hopefully here Kevin McCarthy is going to move towards releasing these POWs, of which I argue he has full authority to do so. And I also argue, and I wish I had an opportunity to sit down. Wouldn't it be great to sit down and have an opportunity to meet with Kevin McCarthy and by his side, his senior counsel or general counsel, whatever they want to call themselves, as well as the House Administration Chair, Brian Stile, as well as the subcommittee chair on oversight of that House Administration Committee, referring to Congressman Barry Loudermilk. And then also alongside of Congressman Barry Loudermilk and Congressman Brian Stile and Congressman Kevin McCarthy, it would be nice to have Congresswoman Laurel Lee to be present. Why, you may ask? Well, she chairs the subcommittee on elections for that same House Administration Committee. And if I had an opportunity to speak with those individuals, I would lay out the case for them to look into the following things. Hey, wasn't it the previous person that sat in your shoes as Speaker of the House that was the one that criminalized and criminally referred the J6 POWs? And then the DOJ did their part. Wouldn't it be rational to ask, if the Speaker of the House can do a criminal referral, can they correct a mistake for a criminal referral that they made and thus pull back on the criminal referral that the Speaker of the House made? And then in this instance, it will be the same position, but yet with a different name. You know, one name, it used to be Nancy Pelosi. Today's Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Wouldn't it be legitimate for the current Speaker of the House to pull back on these criminal referrals? Since supposedly it was the Speaker and the House that was quote-unquote harmed by these alleged violators of the law, more appropriately termed as political prisoners of war. That would be my first question to ask Speaker Kevin McCarthy, temporary Speaker Kevin McCarthy, depending on what he does here shortly. And then I would ask that, why are you not allowing folks, you know, after that's exposed and after you pull back on the criminal referrals, not only to the POWs, but folks like, I don't know, Peter Navarro. How about you pull back on all the quote-unquote contempt charges by the Speaker of the House and say, you know what, we're just going to go ahead and give Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon another opportunity to be responsive to the House of Representatives. And if they happen to be responsive, meaning they come into the House of Representatives and have a four-second conversation with the Speaker of the House, then guess what? Those contempt charges on Peter Navarro, contempt of Congress or failing to respond to Congress, those allegations are no longer relevant because guess what? They become moot because Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon can walk into the House and then say, hey, here's my response to your request. I have a wonderful day. Thanks for pulling back on those criminal referrals. Why not do that so that the sham stops and then the defense stops so we can transition to offense? And then the offense will look like investigating the people that murdered or election integrity rally attendees. Ashley Babbitt, Roseanne Boylan, Kevin Greeson, Benjamin Phillips. How about investigate what exactly did occur with Brian Sicknick? Also investigate the suicides of the various police officers. Why would they move to conduct a suicide? We have to scrutinize where they were that day and all their interactions to determine whether or not there was foul play in those suicides. What about investigating, oh, I don't know, the four officers that testified before the previous House of Representatives and all the video footage? Those DC Metro, we need to take a look at all their body cam footage to see if that body cam footage is congruent with their testimony. If it's not congruent with their testimony, then guess what? They'll face criminal charges for lying to Congress. What other things can we scrutinize and look at? Well, other than their body cam footage, all the text messages, right? Also, we need to take a look at and scrutinize the officer that attempted to murder Victoria White. Yes. We need to take a look at him. What about the officer just released last week, I think Gary McBride on Alex Jones's show, released video footage of how an officer took his baton and at the back of the head of an election justice rally attendee who was surrounded by other officers, both on each side of his arms, while he was basically compliant, that officer proceeds to conduct police brutality on that officer. How about we take a look at that? How about we investigate why was it that the DC Metro police shot into the line of defense, thus creating that second breach, being part of the reasons why there was a second breach? And then the FBI and the U.S. attorneys, it appears as though, created a glitch in the video so that you and the jury would not see those grenades being launched and thus creating the environment so that those election integrity rally attendees that did not know that they were doing anything wrong, all they were doing is exercising their First Amendment. So while these CS grenades are being launched, they had nowhere to go in order to obtain oxygen to sustain themselves for their own livelihood. So in the absence of oxygen, they tried to push into an area where they could actually breathe. And that breach of that perimeter was caused because either U.S. Capitol Police or Metro Police Department threw grenades and CS gas, or whatever the chemicals were, that stops folks from breathing, and they had to find a place to survive. So those are mitigating circumstances. There was no intent to breach. They only did it in order to survive the grenades being launched into the peaceful, unarmed crowd. How about we look into that, Mr. Kevin McCarthy? That would be another thing that I would mention to you if I had an opportunity to speak with you. Maybe I'll just send this videotape to you and to your staff so that you can kind of think about these things. Because guess what? Everything I'm saying, good sir, is backed up by video evidence. Now, take my word for it. Watch your own footage. So we need to get to the bottom of that. What else? So we talked about the four deaths on January 6th, murders. You talked about the there were three attempted murders that I've been able to find so far. Victoria White was one that almost was murdered. We have to figure out which police officer that was. It was Jason Bagshaw. I do remember who it was. Number two, inside of the Capitol. So, but he was bludgeoned, beaten, attempted murder. Luckily, he didn't die. And number three, officer, I can't recall the name right now, but we do have his name. He happened to push an election integrity rally attendee off of the second floor, and that's attempted murder. Those are three instances of wanton police violations and brutality of arguably attempted murder. And so that's seven instances, plus coupled with the basically shooting into your own officers with fratricide grenades and smoke and chemical asphyxiants. Those are at a minimum eight instances that should be considered not only police brutality, but violations at a minimum, right? Why don't you take a look at that, Mr. Speaker of the House, along with your sergeant at arms? And guess what? I would be happy to volunteer to be on the team to expose and uncover that. Please utilize me. I offer myself up. And that's going to debunk the entire thing. And we're going to probably expose some of these federal actors, whether they be surrogates of the legislative branch, the previous Speaker of the House, or whether they be Department of Justice surrogates, aka FBI, confidential human sources. A lot of stuff that needs to be uncovered. And hopefully, I'll help out with that. Okay? So that's that. That's if I happen to have an opportunity. Now, what's going on next week, folks? Next week is going to be pretty interesting. Congress is back in session on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. When I say Congress, the House. Some hearings are going to happen. Looks like weaponization is going to be back in session. We're going to probably have some of the origins of the CCP-19 is going to continue. The CCP Select Committee is going to be hopefully in full swing. Oversight Committee, looks like we're going to have a joint hearing between Oversight and Judiciary as we start to uncover more of this lawless activity by the executive branch over the last couple of years. Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, it's going to get interesting. Now, what about at the state level? I've been getting a lot of phone calls and messages over the last several days to follow up from the testimony that I had that I did in Arizona. And I'm seeing a lot of pressure by the grassroots on those that were in that committee hearing, both from the Senate, State Senate of Arizona, and the State House. And the theme is as follows. Hey, legislature, the people realize you have plenary authority. That's no longer a question. That's not an issue. They know that. The question is, when are you going to do something? And that doing something is what? Is literally reclaiming Arizona's sovereignty and correcting the lawless, the election that was lawlessly certified in 2020, not to mention what Laurel Lee needs to cover, which I just talked about, as the subcommittee chair on elections at the federal congressional level, where she, along with the House Administration Committee and the Speaker of the House, needs to figure out a date on when this new House is going to actually hold a joint session of Congress that has a quorum to determine who the legitimate president and vice president should be. Because we still haven't completed a legitimate joint session, folks. So while that goes on at the federal congressional level, and I've been saying this for a while now, it's not like this is new and novel, folks. For some of you that are listening in for the first time, yeah, I get it. It's going to be new and novel. I've been saying this for quite some time. And then in Arizona, I mean, it's well past time. The hearing took place. People get it. People see it. it's time to correct the record. There consequences need to be had, and really the only way to make consequences done in a quick manner is for joint session, House and Senate, hold a vote, pass a resolution, go ahead and reclaim Arizona's sovereignty, and reject the illegitimate and lawless person that is squatting in the White House and the Naval Observatory, of which, you know, now we have the evidence. Before, maybe you could have said that, you know, oh, we didn't have the evidence, nothing to see here. And so that's why the illegal, unlawful electors were transmitted to the federal government. Well, with all the evidence that's been exposed, and since the February 23rd hearing, of which I was a part of, you even have more evidence based on the federal Congress showcasing the lawless activity of the Biden criminal syndicate. Arizona needs to move to regain its sovereignty and reject its allocation of electors to Zeldin and Mamala. Some people pronounce it Biden and Harris, but I'm not sure that it's even appropriate to pronounce it that way at this point. So that's hopefully what's going to be. I mean, I know I've said this before with everybody's like, oh, hopium this, hopium that. I can't force people, I mean, legally, obviously. I mean, illegally, you can force people to do stuff, but I'm not about doing stuff illegal. Legally, you can only do so much to be able to try to convince people, educate them, advise, assist. But at the end of the day, they have to look themselves in the mirror and they're going to have to decide for themselves, am I going to have a legacy to stand on that I'm going to be proud of, or am I going to face my children and grandchildren and tell them, you know what, I had the opportunity as a state senator and a state representative to do the right thing and correct the record and do the bold move of remedying the electors from Arizona. But instead, what are they going to say? They took the stone-cold, toxic, feckless, cowardice route that Mikey Pence took, and instead they did nothing. Speaking of Mikey Pence, in today's sentencing hearing for Mr. Brock, I'll close with this. In today's sentencing hearing for Mr. Brock, the judge even, or not the judge, but the government, said that, oh, Mr. Brock was 41 feet away from Mikey Pence, the beloved Mikey Pence. Oh my gosh. Oh, we need to swoon for this beloved Mikey Pence. It's just an embarrassment. It's so clear and evident. Anytime Mike Pence's name is brought up in these J6 defendant trials, it just only adds on to the body of evidence that shows and proves that it's Mikey Pence that was the one that provided the coup after coup after coup and cover-up, and they're just using the judicial process to make him look like the Messiah, of which he is not. It is absolutely disgusting. Every time I hear them say, oh, but this J6 defendant, even though this J6 defendant who was inside the Capitol never did anything threatening or harmful to property or person inside of the Capitol, of which the judge even said that. Nonetheless, the government has to incorporate. It's like they're talking points. Oh, because we have to protect our beloved uniparty handler and savior so that he can then take the presidency in 2024 and cover up the cover-ups. I have this internal repulsive vomiting reaction every time they try to provide cover for Mikey P, their beloved Mikey Pence. Disgusting. Anyway, I'm going to continue to expose this treasonous activity by the violator of the 25th Amendment and 12th Amendment, your beloved Mikey Pence. Lawless executive branch, DOJ and FBI. We're going to continue to expose them. Could care less about what you're going to do because you're not legitimate in the eyes of the entire country. with all the censorship and everything else you've been doing over the last, since you started as a Bureau of Investigation. Anyway, I'm going to end the rant for the week. Ivan Raiklin-Hill here. Subscribe on everything. Raiklin.com, IvanRaiklin.substack.com. Just subscribe everywhere and the Rumble channel. With that, have a nice weekend. God bless.